Steve Nicholson, Vice President of Food and Agribusiness Advisory for Rabo AgriFinance, and I am the Grain and Oilseeds Analyst.
A new report is out from Rabobank called Making Exchange Impacts and Implications on Agriculture of an Appreciating U.S. Dollar. Steve, is this an annual report, or was it done exclusively because of the current financial climate that exists?
No, it was done exclusively for what's the current economic climate. We've seen the U.S. dollar have a pretty significant impact or pretty significant appreciation over the last year. And of course, as you well know, Mark, people in agriculture have been talking about that, and particularly those of us who, particularly the U.S., as we're exporters of grains and oilseeds, a lot of worry over, what does that mean to U.S. agriculture? What does it mean to various commodities? And what does it kind of mean by country? So we focused on all three of those things in the report.
Before we talk about the effects of a strong dollar to U.S. ag commodities, let's look back at the past 8 decades, Steve, and how the dollar has fared in comparison to other currency globally, and what some of the factors are now that have led to the strengthening dollar.
Sure. It's a good question to think about where the dollar is today versus over the last several decades. And if you look at the U.S. dollar index over, let's say, back to 1980, that average close is like 98. It's around 98 when you look at the index. So, and that's kind of where we're trading now. So one of the things that we sort of bring to light or talk about is that what we saw over the last 6 to 7 years when we had the super cycle in commodities was that the U.S. dollar was somewhat abnormally low for an extended period of time, and now we've returned to kind of a normal time frame. But the question is, why is the dollar where it is? I think there's lots of fathers to the reason for that. One is, and is that the people look at the dollar in that it's a very stable, it's economically and politically stable currency. And I joke about this, but and people go, when you look at the United States and you look at the dollar, where would you want, if you're an investor in the world, where would you want to put your money? Would you want to put it in the Argentine peso? Would you want to put it in the real? Or would you want to put it, you want to put it in the ruble? But I kind of joke and say, we have the worst government economy in the world here in the United States, is up for all the rest. And so it brings light that we're economically, politically stable, and that helps people, and that's where people want to put their money. And particularly when you see all the upheaval we've had around the world just in the last week or 2 weeks at this point. But the other thing that's also kind of helping the dollar move along, of course, is all the talk and all the chatter about the Federal Reserve. The anticipation is that the U.S. will raise interest rates, and you want to put your currency or your investment in U.S. dollars because you want to capture the higher interest rate. And those are two of the big factors, I think. And the fact is that the U.S. economy, and not like some other economies around the world, and I don't want to, say it's an exclusive to the U.S., but our economy has kind of come out of the Great Recession and showing growth that a lot of places in the world haven't, a lot of places have. But, again, it is the major currency and will continue to be that around globally.
Well, Steve, as an uninformed observer, which I certainly am, I look at things like the Dow and the sure. Wall Street factors, maybe the price of oil. Those are things that when we're reading through corn and bean prices, we usually tack those on too. So in looking at the strength of the Dow and the S&P in the last year or so, we've seen record values there. Does that coincide with this overall consistently good U.S. economy that you were describing?
Well, it does. And I think that, you have to be a little bit careful about making a blanket statement. It's kind of like currency is, if the dollar goes up, exports go down. There's a little bit more, it's more complicated. The U.S. economy is good because despite all the politics and all that, we're relatively stable. And we're starting to see jobs come back. And I heard a statistic over the weekend, and I don't know if I can say it exactly, but, the amount of jobs that we've put in has been, been really, I think, second largest on record over the last year or two. So we're starting to slowly make our way back. It is good for commodities. Typically, if you see growth, GDP is growing in the world, that is usually a good sign for agriculture because it means that incomes are growing, by consumers, and consumers tend to then, as their income goes up, they consume better food, and that's usually good also for the protein sector, animal protein. You know, they're consuming more chicken, more pork, and more beef, and so, you know, with growth in the economy, that is usually good for the, you know, for us in agriculture and the food sector.
You've already mentioned some other currencies. So in this report, when you look at the primary competitors for U.S. ag products, which nations are we talking about, and what other forms of currency did you really hone in on?
Yeah, we honed primarily on the Brazilian real, and we did that because it is the most, I won't say the easiest, but it's the easiest one for people to kind of get a grasp on, because it's, you know, Brazil and soybean production there is, you know, front and center for U.S. producers, and they're really our biggest competitor. If you look at, and going back a year to last fall when we saw the lows in corn and soybean prices, and we'll focus on soybeans, if you look at futures in dollars per bushel to today, the U.S. producer has seen about a 5% appreciation in the value of the soybean. Now, that's gone down a little bit in the last couple of weeks. But if you look at, if you convert that to reals per bushel, the Brazilian farmer has seen over a 50% increase in the value of his soybeans. And so what do you, the Brazilian producers look at that and going, I'm gonna raise more soybeans because I'm getting more money for the soybeans.
Sure.
And that's really a huge incentive for them. And we're here, you know, my colleagues in Brazil are looking for 4 to 6% increase in Brazilian area in soybean plantings this year. The other thing that's very, very curious is that, and then the sixth question is, well, the next question comes, well, their production costs are going up. Well, that's true. If you look at it on reals per hectare, you know, they are seeing an increase in their production, or increase in their production costs. But if you put that on dollars per hectare, you're actually seeing a decrease in their production costs. And they import a lot of their cost, they do import a lot of their costs, but that, you know, because of the changes in the value of the dollar, and they mostly import fertilizer and chemicals, you know, you see, they get to see a little bit of an increase. So there's a lot of incentive, and it's going to be tough for U.S. soybean farmers. While our prices are down, it's safer than produce more soybeans, therefore increasing the supply in the world and putting a lot more pressure on prices, which is why commodity prices will move down. You know, it's sort of around the horn to think about what that's going to do to prices. It's more the increase in production is going to then move prices down, or force prices down in the U.S. to be competitive, and will force basis levels down as well, so that we can be competitive in the global market. We did look, and I'll just briefly say, we did look a little bit at the ruble or the Ukrainian currency, and what you see there is the same thing, is that they've been extremely aggressive in wheat, and wheat's probably, when you look upon the U.S. commodities, wheat's the one that's going to be probably the most impacted negatively, because we won't be competitive in the world. And, you know, when you're exporting 40 to 50% of your production and you can't export, it's going to be very, very detrimental to wheat prices here in the States.
So a scenario where you have China purchasing soybeans and they're choosing between U.S. soybeans or Brazilian beans. As it stands right now with the values of the two currencies, Steve, how much of a deal does China get if they're purchasing South American soybeans compared to United States soybeans?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, and let's talk about that and sort of the setting for that. When you think about, beans are different than any other commodity. When China, they're the big dog on the block. They take all the soybean, I mean, literally it take, you know, it's a little bit overstatement, but, you know, they take such a large amount, 78% or 65% of the world's soybeans go into China. And what we think will happen is the China likes having two big suppliers, the U.S. and Brazil. And I think that they're very happy with that, and they'll help kind of maintain that, that ability for both the U.S. and Brazil to have access to their market. But what we think will happen is, and we're seeing it this year, is that Brazil will start to take a little bit more world market share of the Chinese market away from the United States. And part of that is because of stocks, and part of that is part of price. And so it's going to be more difficult for the U.S. to maintain their share as Brazil kind of sneaks in, if you have, you know, they're exporting more beans than we get into our harvest, where by now, typically you start to see here in this August, September, and we're here almost to September, Brazilian exports drop off and the U.S. exports start to pick back up. That may not happen until later October, November this year versus, you know, that September, October time frame. So I think that's where the the nuances, and what happens is that the U.S. continues, you know, that erosion of our market share of the Chinese market.
So it's not as easy as just saying the price that China is paying for North American beans is such and such, and the price they're paying for Brazilian beans is this amount. There's more to it than that.
Right. That's exactly right. And I think that's one of the things we want people to understand in this paper, is that if you oversimplify it, that's fine, and that's easy in our day and age, but it's really a little more complicated than that. And that there is, you know, you think about China, they will buy a lot of beans this fall because this is when we harvest our beans and prices will be cheap. And so they also want, you know, a supply. I mean, they want assurance of supply. They also, you know, one of the things that we've talked about with producers about this paper and about, you know, the U.S. competitive, because everyone starts to wring their hands about, oh, the U.S. is never going to be competitive. But think about our ability, you know, we're economically and politically stable. We have the supply and we have the logistical ability to move beans, corn, wheat, whatever it is, and we also, you know, we believe in the contract, and those are important things to, you know, people that we supply agricultural commodities to. And so I think you capture it very well and say it's, you can't oversimplify it because it really is not quite that way.
And that basically answers my next question about the quality and reliability of the supplier. So if China's looking at these two markets and where they want to source their beans from, then that all comes into play too.
I think it does, and I believe that, you know, when you look at the American Soybean Association and USEC, you know, they're promoting that obviously because we are very good at that. And if you want a set of soybeans or you want a vessel of soybeans and you want the quality and you want it when you want it, you know, you can depend upon the United States to do that, barring, you know, some sort of, you know, climatic disaster. But we are a dependable supplier. You know, we believe in that sanctity of the contract, and we believe in, you know, we make a deal, we supply it, and this is the cost and all those sorts, you know, all those things around the contract. And I think that's a really important thing that, you know, U.S. producers need to understand, and also that we have to make sure that our customers realize that that's what we do.
Steve, you said earlier that soybeans are kind of a whole other animal compared to other ag commodities. So in other aspects of this report, when you looked at corn, wheat, perhaps livestock, is it kind of the same premise here that we've been talking about with the strong dollar and its impact, or do we have to go in a different direction in describing how those markets are playing out right now?
I think you have to look at them just a little different. We kind of mentioned wheat and how wheat, because it's, think about, you know, the fact that you look at the balance sheet, you know, U.S. wheat exports are such a large piece of that balance sheet, you know, they're going to get hurt by this, and it's going to be more detrimental to wheat prices and wheat producers. You look at corn. You know, we only export 10 to 15% of what we produce is exported around the United States. I think that's the correct number. But we have such a large domestic base of demand, both on the livestock side and also from the ethanol side, that, you know, it's not going to hurt the corn farmer or corn prices quite as dramatic. That doesn't say that we don't have competition from Brazil and we don't have competition from Argentina to a lesser extent, but also from the Black Sea. But the U.S. is still the largest exporter and is the largest producer of corn, and so if you need quantities of corn in the world, you're eventually going to have to end up in the United States to get it. So the impact on corn is probably not quite as great. Livestock is a really interesting question, and why the U.S. is by far the largest producer, you know, producing a lot of livestock, and of course meat products, and we're a big exporter, as is Europe and as other countries. But I think the impact there will be less just because we have the ability to produce it and we have the ability to ship it. But again, Brazil is growing in their production of livestock and meat products and meat and shipping it, and they have a very ambitious goal to be, you know, kind of be that, like they are in soybeans, you know, king when it comes to meat production. So I think the livestock side is probably a little more difficult to get a hold of because you have lots of different types of products and lots of different demands on those and different quality of products too. I think it'll be less detrimental to livestock as well.
Well, I don't want to take up much more of your time, Steve.
No.
And to try to put this in a story form where I'm going to be limited on time, I feel like we've really kind of identified how this is working itself out right now. But is there anything else of this report that you think has to be included in a story on it?
Yeah, I do. There's one other thing I will say, and I realize this is, when we're talking to farmers, is you have to kind of talk, but one of the things we talk about in the paper is that, as you well know, there's a lot of interest in buying of agricultural assets around the world, let alone in the United States, as countries like Japan or like China or like India want to make sure they have a source of foodstuffs for their population. And one of the things this does do, and I think, you know, it's a good thing for U.S. investors, is that agricultural assets in other parts of the world now become very valuable and very attractive because of the devaluation of their particular currencies. And so if you have U.S. dollars, you know, agricultural assets and other currencies look very, and I hate to use the word cheap, but a little less expensive than U.S. assets. And so I think it does also look at the fact that people may be, you may see another big round of mergers and acquisitions around the world as people invest in other agricultural assets around the world as the dollar is strong.
Is this report available to the public, Steve?
It is available to the public. We would encourage anyone who's interested to contact their local Rabo AgriFinance office. We have about 54 offices around the country, and the people in the office can get you hooked up with this report or get you a copy of this report if you're interested.
Steve Nicholson, Senior Analyst with the Rabobank Food and Agribusiness Research and Advisory Group. Steve, good to talk to you. Thanks for the time.
No problem. Good to talk to you, Mark. Thank you for the time.